Hello, this is Mystic Babylon, broadcasting from near Haight Street with the best of San Francisco poetry. Today we have some poetry from two other poets besides me. First, I have some poetry from a poet who asked me a long time ago to record some of her works, named Lenore Weiss. She gave me a disc of what she called cell phone poetry, and I extracted one small snippet from that recording. After that, I have some poetry from a poet named David Alpa. He also runs a small press. David Alpa's works have appeared in more than 100 literary journals and anthologies. His first collection, Counterpoint, won a prize and is published by Storyline Press. He has had chapbooks published by Coracle Books and Pudding House Publications. His new book, Heavy Lifting, has just been published by Ale House Press. Order it direct from the poet for $15 postpaid. Just address your letter to Small Poetry Press Distribution, P.O. Box 5342, Concord, California, 94524. Or go to www.alehousepress.com. May I remind you to read and buy our books. My poetry book is Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence, and my new novel is called Little Bird Told Me. My voiceover for that book is almost finished, and as soon as I get it submitted to Audible.com and its full version for sale, I will start posting it chapter by chapter over a whole year. All the URLs and addresses will be in the show notes. And remember, as Poor Richard's Almanac said, money doesn't grow on trees. Thank you. Hello, this is John Rhodes again. Before I start reading my one poem, I wanted to mention this is a short podcast because in another week I'm going to have another podcast celebrating a belated poetry month, April being poetry month. I'm going to have some poetry, hopefully, from City Hall in San Francisco, where they had a little poetry get-together in the City Hall. Here's the poem I'm going to read. It's Mummy Rap. It's sort of a rap or talk between a mummy and a youthful archaeologist. Here's the poem. The dummy mummy was shocked by the stupidity of the discoverer's mock-up of being a mastermind. He asked himself, how could they still be so ineffectual and behind? The curse that he put on this youthful archaeologist was to cause him to be mystified with undeducible facts that led him to think, while walking the passages of this tailor's dummy tomb, that he must come to the obvious assumption that this pharaoh had defended his civilization with computations based only on self-righteous acts, and that he, the student of these artifacts, was sentenced to a similar doom. Because of his performance of invented reason in these dark hallways where the doubt of didactic thoughts of persons before him loomed, he felt this chronologically analogous scientific pact was complicity to ignorance in the sense that he, like the zombie, made up for error with presumptuous theories for what he, in actual real integrity, lacked. The prejudice of this zombie pharaoh proved to be constricted, just as this pharaoh choked any hope out of this discoverer as he walked these pathways that were as limited as the mind was narrow. The harassing judgment of this past clan killed the inquisitive believers' faith in humanity, those believers who stalked these mummies as they were struck with pompous arrows. These backwards kings were really like one-dimensional automatons who computed their curses. With the grudges they doled from their purses, they created judgments that produced new chips on mankind's shoulders, proving that a mummy truly is wrapped up in itself. Cognition of currying favors serves to tighten the mummy's wrap on itself, as these kings seem to live on unfathomable wealth. The main parallel between Egypt and today is hard to tell, except that it seems to be based on pretense, and both of our deviations make us both look like we are architects of hell. This includes the skyscrapers and pyramids as well. The mumbo-jumbo world of the pharaoh discoverer is constantly trying to compute what it only partly knows, and most everyone is trying to refute. Thank you. Next is Lenore's recording.
A cell phone poem is music. How we sound as we dial, talk, text, message, and the breath between, the warm bath of lymph nodes that keeps lines open in our groins, back and forth between listening and expression, at right angles, broadcasting, I and thou, me and you, perched on a molded cornice where a voice speaks its essay. Hold on, hold on. A soul shift does not occur in the limelight. It comes from shadow. The planet will heat up. Species will die. But when? And how many? And can we change?
A distant sunder. What God hath joined together, let not man put. I used to solder. The reasons why are now obscure. Maybe just to bring old junk back to life. A clock, a ceiling fan, my father's Philco. To see or hear gizmos gone silent or dark. Whirr, light up, or sound an alarm. There was a rude art to it, and an odor. The shock of a barely audible fst, a sudden melt. Quick hardening. Just a lad fooling around in Dad's cellar, making intimate connections, bringing strands of copper cleansed of dirt and grease together or back together with a silvery ring. Do you, wire A, take this wire C to be your lawful wedded weld? As I built each bridge over troubled metal, pulses quickened, couples thrummed, I do. But Judas snuck into my make-believe chapel and hid in the last pew, while the parson argued a slam-dunk case against betrayal. Still, I heard God's demiurge say, do what fasteners may. Love and solder will be kissed away by a distant sunder. What my father loved about Melmac. That you could drop it on the floor. That you could hit it with a sledgehammer. That you could back over it with a Mack truck. That in this Henry J. world where we rattled along crying for a tucker, here at last was the real thing. That it came in a variety of colors, including maroon. That you could get it with S&H green stamps. That once all 32 pieces were stacked up on the pantry shelf, you'd never have to buy dinnerware again. That at last he could enjoy his kicks or shredded wheat in peace, knowing every bowl on the kitchen table was childproof. That never again would Mom shout, Butterfingers, nor grieve over china lying in ruins at our feet, nor swear as she cut her toe on an unswept shard. Pharaoh of our New Jersey duplex, Dad dreamed of burial near the Nile with his favorite cup and saucer. Melmac, he said, would last 10,000 years. War and white wine. Watching the evening news. Someone's campaigning. Someone's been shot. Somewhere. It's raining. Someplace, it's hot. 6 p.m., Baghdad's on the line. Time for war and white wine. The beast's in a cave somewhere, hiding. Two newsmen have disappeared. Jihadists are suiciding. Demagogues being cheered. A protester holds up a sign, "Time for war and white wine." Bereft mothers are weeping, beheading terrorists glad. Sons and daughters are reaping the faith of their fathers gone mad. You and me, we're doing fine, sipping war and white wine. Statement. Today I am throwing old checks away that lay in a shoebox 5 years, fearing audit. They're free, free at last to burn or decay. Money still talks, but her ghouls simply say, something was sold at a price and you bought it. Today I am throwing old checks away. Each bears its signature, year, month, and day, and pays to the order of mammon due profit. They're free, free at last, to burn or decay. Here's one for Sears, here's one for ballet, airfare to Rome, a homeless benefit. Today I am throwing old checks away, saying ciao to old wolves they kept at bay while they tended our credit and fed it bit by bit. They're free, free at last to burn or decay. I crumple the papered past. I murmur hooray. It's my shredder now must reconcile. Chit, chit, chit. Today I am throwing old checks away. They're free, free at last to burn or decay. Electronic epitaph. Hi, sorry I can't pick up the phone now. I'm dead. If you are shocked and want more details on my struggle with the avenging angel, press 1 now. If we have had sexual contact in the past 10 years and you want to be sure that I really died of cancer, I'd press 2 if I were you. For pithy deathbed sayings, including a stunning rendition of my death rattle rising nobly over a Windham Hill soundtrack, press 3. Whee! You who are calling to collect old debts or initiate new friendships, what can I say? I'm dead. Or if you're that telemarketer who keeps leaving cheerful messages regarding what you call my portfolio, maggots are up 10 points, pal. I'm dead. Most alluring of my long-lost college sweethearts, I knew you'd phone me by and by to say hi and whisper directions to your bed. I'm sure you're still a knockout. Sorry I missed your call. No, I can't join you for a drink tonight. I'm dead. Teacher who assured me my poetry was naught and urged me to write a book on Piers the Plowman. The C version, that is, though B needed me too, as did A, loud aloud day, I'm dead. Like Dante, dead. Like Villon, Rabelais, dead. Like Chaucer, Shakespeare, Joe G. Schmo, and poor Wally Stevens the insurance man, and Emperor of Ice Cream, dead. For a brief biography, press 4. To hear me read my poems, press 5. To find out what the eternal silence is like, press 6. 7, 8, 9. For the images they said would flash before my mind in the final moments, they were right, they did. The why one's history should be burnt into the brain, even as memory fails, is an intriguing parting question. And you whom I have injured, you who are impatient to join me, you who, like hapless Stevie Wonders, have called too late to say I love you and wish you could return to the original menu, please press the star sign now.
Please press the button on your iPod to end this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this podcast.
This podcast is a member of the Association of Poetry Podcasting at poetrypodcasting.org.